Thank you. This is amazing. This is an honor and a privilege to be here in front of all these alcoholics and friends of Alcoholics Anonymous. My mom loves you. My mom loves the hell out of you. She doesn't know any of you. And in about 3 weeks, she's going to go to her first meeting to watch her son pick up 10 years. I talked to that woman today, and I have a real loving relationship with her, and it's as a result of all of you. The one thing that was instilled in me when I got into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to say it to you right now, is that the most important person in this room, the absolute most important person in this room right now, is sitting in your chair. And treat yourself that way. I didn't treat myself that way when I was a kid and growing up and drinking and doping and living on the streets and hurting people. And hurting people I love and hurting the love that was inside of me. This is really amazing. This feels so good. I was at a meeting earlier today and we were talking. And it was one of the marathon meetings. And I thank everybody who's being of service and opening those marathon meetings. And I was getting that swell, that good feeling that comes when you go to a conference, anybody shaking your head knows what I'm talking about. And the first thing that came to my mind was, I wish I could bottle that feeling. Isn't that an alcoholic? Give me something that feels good. Let me put it in a bottle and keep it and strangle it. And I'm going to try not to swear. I have this little, I don't know if many people know this about myself, but back in my home group in Fresno, California, it wasn't where I got sober, but I spent 7 years there. And I did this deal with myself because I wanted to change my behaviors. Quitting drinking is cool. It's been real cool for this alcoholic. But I had to change some behaviors, too. And one of those was my mouth. I just didn't like the way I approached people. And someday I aspire to maybe even teach, you know, in a third grade level. I can't talk like that to third graders. So I have this deal with myself that whenever I say the F word, I put an extra dollar in the seventh tradition. So I'm about to claim bankruptcy right now. what it was like, I'm going to go real quick, and please someone kick me. There's some people here that know me and know when I get on a roll, I can talk for more than 10 minutes. I was real nervous here momentarily, but once I start talking, it's really okay. And I've asked my higher power to just kind of do the deal, you know, trust God and get out of the way and tell the truth. What it was like, I grew up in New Jersey. Anybody knows the exits there. It was off the 22 and meets the 78 coming in from Pennsylvania. And I was the youngest. And I was talking about this just really recently. You had to, if you wanted potatoes, to interrupt. You had to speak loudly. You had to stop your brothers from getting the stuff because you were going to go hungry. I learned real quick to be impatient, intolerant, and interrupt, and all these things that took control. My mom drove me home. I was the youngest, and we'd drive home, and we'd stop by Fillmore and Hudson Street. And that's where the stoplight was at Cather's. And she'd say, look at that motley-looking crew over there. And this 12-year-old was going, yeah, that's where I want to be. I want to be with the motley-looking. That was long before the band was around. I want to be with that motley-looking crew. And, that's what I aspired to be. I aspired to be one of those guys sitting on the corner. You know the pose. With your head up against, well, your head was somewhere else. But your pants were in your pocket, and you were just being cool. Being cool. It was also cool to drink a lot. It was cool to stand out. It's like 20 below zero with the wind chill factor in New Jersey, little town of Phillipsburg. And it would be cool to sit out there with bottles of brandy or whiskey or Jim Beam where it's freezing. It was cool to sit out there and drink. It was cool to do lots of other things out there. It was cool to get kicked out of school. It was cool to get in the fights that I got in. It was cool. I believe that for me, I needed a place to belong. I don't know if that's the human condition, that we find a niche for ourselves. Some people, it's the picket fence and a wife and two dogs and a cat. For me, it was saving those detention slips. It was saving those when I got expelled from school. I took pride in that, and I belonged, and I found a I found a place where I belonged, and it was with all the hoodlums. And what was scary for me was about at the time of 17, 18 years old, I was hanging out with guys named Tega, Mouse Man, Dickie G. And I looked at myself in the mirror, and that's who I wanted to impress. That's who I wanted to impress. And I looked at myself in the mirror one day, and I was thinking about Dickie G, Tega, and Mouse Man. I said, man, they're a bunch of assholes. I don't know if that one counts or not. I said, they're a bunch of assholes, and they're just losers. And that's where I found myself. And I started at that point just a little bit to examine my life. I sure as hell wasn't ready to quit drinking or using. I had a bunch of little, I don't know. The thing an Alcoholics Anonymous did for me was to open my eyes to opportunities. My sponsor had me participate in right away. And as a matter of participation in life and in the program, I recognized opportunities and miracles in my life. My belief is that a lot of those opportunities and miracles were happening. And once in a while, I caught glimpses, but I really shut them off most of the time. I got to fast forward quickly because I want to talk about recovery just a bit before I get off of here. I left New Jersey when I graduated high school. I wasn't allowed to graduate with my class. I got kicked out of the Catholic school, all the typical stuff that this kid you would expect from. My mom didn't expect that from me. Not when she raised me, but by the time I was 16, that's about par for the course. She cried when she'd see me, and my sister wouldn't let me babysit her kids. And I left home in 84 when I graduated to go to art school in Fort Lauderdale. It was spring break. That's the end of that story. I found myself on a Greyhound bus from Fort Lauderdale back to New Jersey in about 3 months after that. Saved up enough money working at a car wash to go and come to California. That's where I ended up homeless. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous. Part of my story is selling dope. I started selling dope on the streets and living homeless. And as a choice of my alcoholism, I decided that life just wasn't about paying bills. Life was about living on the streets and shucking and jiving. And I did that. And I almost said I did it pretty well. I enjoyed it. The alcoholic can't distinguish the true from the false. I could not distinguish. Here's another thought for you. By the time I was 18, definitely, I had the thought in my head that life sucked, it was never going to get any better, and that was okay. So at 21, life still sucked, and it wasn't getting any better, and it was okay. Living on the streets doing that stuff was okay. It didn't bother me. I joined the Navy, and my wife left me, and I decided once again that I was going to quit drinking. I really fast-forwarded here, but it's a matter of time, really. I wanted to quit. I wanted to quit to save the marriage. That was probably the most hurtful time of my life. I never experienced that kind of pain, and I can't even put my thumb on that kind of pain today. All I know is I was devastated that my wife and my child were leaving, and it wasn't coming back. So I asked the Navy for help. Oh, yeah, I was in the Navy. Did I tell you that? I was addicted to some other substances and decided I'd join the Navy to get off the streets. And it worked. Yeah. Part of that's from all those blackouts. I came into the program. Jesus. Trying to put all this together. I'm sorry. My wife was leaving me, and I was in a lot of pain, and I decided I wanted help, and I asked the Navy for help, and they said okay. And then I said forget it, because she said forget it to me. So I said, I don't want your help. My message is that I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous November 5th of 1990 was the last day that I drank, and I showed up like 5 hours late for my first meeting with this person. I told her I wasn't going to get sober, that if I kept this journal she wanted me to keep for the next 2 weeks, I was going to lie in there, or I was going to tell her the truth. And the truth is, I'm drinking. I got no reason to stop. The thing is, I didn't come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I wanted to. And if somebody, I heard a lot of newcomers stand up with weeks of sobriety and days of sobriety and just a few months of sobriety. And at that point, I didn't want sobriety. Drinking was the solution to all my problems. And I didn't understand the sobriety was going to be as good as it is now. In fact, I looked up the word sober in Webster's, and one of the words it had there next to sober was dull. And I did not want and I did not want Dahl. I had the privilege of going to my first Al-Anon meeting this afternoon, and I heard Carol talk about exciting people. And alcoholics are freaking exciting people. Dull is not a word that we commonly use when talking about ourselves. And it's not a word I wanted for myself. My sponsor saved my life, and he was just a man. And he was just a guy who had a little bit of what I wanted. What I'm encouraging you to do is if you have a week or two or three or and you don't want to be here, that's okay. Just keep coming back. Find someone that's similar. Look for the similarities, because I found it. And this guy named Dave, who was at 35, was learning how to play guitar. Dave taught me a whole lot of things. He taught me that service would keep me sober. He taught me about this idea of a higher power that no one really explained to me in all those years of growing up in a really good family. My mom, the worst mistake my mom ever did was really she loved me. All my mom ever did. And I hated her for it. Dave let me pick my own higher power. He told me God is love. And that was easy enough to digest. He told me if I wanted that love, that God hung out in the ashtrays. That meant clean up the freaking ashtrays. If you want to find God, if you want to find love, clean up the ashtrays. And do it at your home group. Stay late. Go early. Get the phone numbers of sober people. And call them. Work the steps. I love every one of you. I think that I'm about out of time, right? Well, if I can keep on going, I'll keep talking. I want to give you a message of hope. It's the last thing I'm going to talk about. I talked to a friend of mine, Ray, before I got up here, and he said, pick one word. And that one word is hope. That's what I got here, man. Because I was a dopeless, I was a hopeless dope fiend when I got here. Hopeless. I was hopeless. Oh, I messed it up, huh? Because I was going to tell you this story about going to Grateful Dead shows and hanging out with the people called the Wharf Rats. And they have these yellow balloons, and at the set break of every Grateful Dead show, they'd have a 12-step meeting. And at one of those meetings, my sponsor, Dave, he took me to my first Dead show. I never saw him drunk or sober or stoned or high. And at these meetings, I got a little sticker that said, just another dopeless hope fiend. That's what I got here in Alcoholics Anonymous, was I found hope. And it came in the form of a nameless, faceless old man. And I tell this story a lot. This old man said, here, son, you want a cup of coffee? He changed my life. You'll never know what good will come from the simple actions that you take as a person coming from the heart. You'll never know how many ripples that sends. That old man, I could run him over today and I wouldn't know who the hell he was. Well, I'm not encouraging driving like that. What I'm saying is he instilled a message of hope. And that when anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, I'm responsible. Thank you.
Dopeless hope thing. I love it. Works for me. Okay. We're doing. Okay. Next is our main speaker for tonight, Polly P. from Cypress, California. Welcome her, please.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. By God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. Thank you. I have a home group, and that home group is Monday night Seal Beach Speakers Meeting, and I have a sponsor, and her name is Dottie H. And those are the things that I need to be a member in good standing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to thank you so much for having me. Ty, thank you so much for inviting me to come to this conference. This is wonderful. And if you stay around Alcoholics Anonymous and you stay sober, then people who love you will travel with you. And I'd like to thank Lisa and Carol for coming with me to this fabulous Lake Tahoe. I've been here, but just to just breeze in and breeze out. And Lisa and Carol haven't been here before. So this has been a special treat for all of us. So thank you, thank you. I feel privileged to be here with the people I'm here with. Last night I'd never heard Silas talk, but you are just adorable, Silas. You are adorable. And if you missed him, you missed it. He was so precious. I feel really badly yesterday that at 6 I didn't get to hear my friend Susie talk, but I know Susie, and I am one of those people, and we'll just get this out of the way right up front so nobody has to get upset, but I am also a grateful member of Al-Anon for 17 years. So I say that my youngest son sent me to Al-Anon, and my oldest son keeps me there. So this morning my friend Clara spoke, and I've known Clara for a long, long time, and it was just, you are just so precious. Thank you so much. And such a wonderful. And those of you who were here this afternoon and heard Carol Thornton talk, she happens to be my husband's favorite Al-Anon, and he tells her jokes when he talks. Now, she doesn't tell her jokes, but he tells her jokes. And Carol used to say something when Dick was alive, and now that Dick's not around anymore, Dave stole it. And my husband Dave says that he'd like to send all of you his very best tonight, that he sends you his very best. That's the way it goes. My husband Dave says he sends you his very best. He sent you me. And I'm very excited to hear Rod tomorrow morning. It's any time I'm asked to share in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a privilege. Somebody one time asked me, says, do you like to talk? No, I don't like to talk, but I love to meet the people I meet in Alcoholics Anonymous. It is absolutely fabulous. And yesterday when we flew in, this absolutely adorable little guy was standing there with a sign. Now, that little guy was the one who did the countdown. Now, he goes, he gets us and he takes us. I mean, this guy is for real. I mean, we laughed all the way from the airport. And Carol got on the phone, we were on the cell phone, and I said, Carol, we're in the car with Danny DeVito. And then Lisa said, no, it's not Danny DeVito, it's Joe Pesci. And we had the best time. And then he's saying, he's a realtor. And he says, oh, my God, they're taking these Bose speakers off this house I'm selling. I got to stop and buy some speakers. So, so we stop and we buy speakers. And it's just like only in Alcoholics Anonymous can you have this kind of fun. Can you just have this kind of fun? So if you're new here tonight and you're just thinking your life is over, all I want you to do is just hang on, because you're in for the ride of your life. And I want to tell you that I stand here at 23 years of sobriety, and I am busier in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous than I have ever been. I sponsor more people than I have ever sponsored, and I'm into more service than I've ever been into. And there's one really simple reason, and that is I absolutely love my life. I love my life. And today, at 23 years of sobriety, I have so much more to lose. I have so much to lose. And I know that if I keep doing what I'm doing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll keep getting what I'm getting. And I'm telling you, there's something that I thought was going to make me happy. All my life, I thought it was money, men, and mansions. I thought if I just had the right man in the biggest house and a lot of money, I would be the happiest person on earth. But I'm telling you, I stand here tonight with a gift beyond any kind of gift that I could ever have. And that is that I have a peaceful heart. I'd like to tell you that I stand here tonight. Now, this is tonight. I'm not going to tell you what tomorrow will bring, but this is tonight. And I'm not mad at anybody. I don't dislike anybody. I haven't got a beef with anybody. I am just peaceful. And for once in my life, and I've got a lot of onces here lately, there's a lot of days that are being put together. It's enough. Everything's enough. And I never, ever thought it would ever, ever be enough. And I'm here to tell you that at 23 years of sobriety, I do not have a rags-to-riches story. If anything, I probably have a riches-to-rags story. But what I found out is it wasn't money, men, and mansions. It was finding a relationship with the God of my understanding. And if I just go do the right thing, I'm going to get the right feeling. And I just never understood that. You see, I waited all my life for you to do something for me. All my life, I waited for you to do it for me. And it wasn't until I realized the only way I'm going to find happiness is when I'm willing to do it for you. Now, I don't know if there's anybody that has any problems with understanding a little deal in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that says constant thought of others. That's what's going to make me happy. Constant thoughts of others. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that there's one object to this book, and that's to find a power greater than yourself. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me what I'm supposed to do every day. And what I'm supposed to do every single day of my life is I am to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. And when I do that, my days go good. I also want you to know that I am living, breathing proof that you can be a real alcoholic and not come from alcoholic parents. I do not come from the disease of alcoholism. My daddy died when he was 60 years old, and he had 60 years of sobriety. My mother is 82 years old, and she has 82 years of sobriety. And I will guarantee you my mother is not the least bit impressed with my 23 years of sobriety. Her deal is, if you'd have never drank, you'd have never had those problems anyway. She just doesn't get it. I grew up, I love it when Clara talks because Clara grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and I grew up on the Gulf Coast of Texas. And I guarantee you, I grew up right where they took the Bible Belt and gave it an extra pull, and I grew up Southern Baptist. And I was going to burn in hell for just thinking bad thoughts. And I used to I just never could get it. But one of the things that I have learned about the disease of alcoholism is I have a disease of perception. I do not see things the way they really are. I am a person who you give me a set of information, it goes in my head, it takes a walk around, and what comes out doesn't even resemble what went in. And I can still remember my mother saying things, "Polly, wherever did you get that idea? Nobody said that to you." But I could have sworn they said that to me. And what I did as a little girl is I just got it. I've just got this mind that I'm just a little tweet. You know, it's like I don't pronounce words quite right. I don't, you know, it just seems like I'm just a little off. And that's the way my thinking was. And I'd hear these preachers and they'd get up behind the podium and they'd start slamming their fists on the podium and their faces would get red and their veins would stick out and they'd lead into the congregation and they'd say things like, "If you've thought it, you've done it." And I don't know about any of you, but I was an alcoholic in the making, and I thought a lot. And it just seemed like I just knew that no matter what, that I was never, ever going to be good enough for God. And then I thought that God lived somewhere up in the sky, and I had to go through those people to get to God. But I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you gave me the big book. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me where God is. And it says that God is deep within. And it tells me how to find God. And it says to search fearlessly. And today, God, as I understand Him, expresses Himself to me through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I want to tell you about my higher power. Because I got a higher power that just loves me to pieces. And one of the things I've learned in the past 23 years is that God has never done anything but love me. The only person who has never, ever loved me is me. I'm the only person. You know, I just finished reading a book by Clarence Snyder's life called How It Worked. And the author of that book starts it off and he says, there appears to be two characteristics that cause alcoholism. And that's either you're loved too much or not enough. And if there is any abuse that was ever done to me, that abuse was that I was loved too much. I am absolutely a loved child. And not only that, I am an only child. So I was loved and adored. So my parents did everything they could to give me what they could give me. But you see, today I know what the problem is. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I am suffering from a spiritual malady. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I am separated from the sunshine of the Spirit. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that if you are suffering from a spiritual malady, nothing is enough. You cannot love me enough. You cannot give me enough. You cannot do enough. There simply is not enough for anybody who is suffering from a disease of the soul. I have one of the women I sponsor. She says, I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with a hole in my soul. And I had a hole in my soul. And I know today that the disease of alcoholism is about a disease of the spirit. And I'm so grateful that I've got a program and that I've got the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts. And through those 12 steps and 12 traditions and 12 concepts, I have found a solution for a spiritual problem. And the solution is a spiritual solution. When I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have a God anything like I have today. My mother used to say, we live in a God-fearing home. Today I live in a God-loving home. And I have a higher power, like I said, who loves me absolutely to pieces. And I once heard an AA speaker say, my higher power loves me as if I were his only child. And that's how I feel. And my higher power's got a dynamite sense of humor. And I'm going to share that with you. My name is Polly. I am not a Pauline or a Paula. I am a Polly. And I'm here to tell you, if you're a little girl and your name is Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. And it's going to be things like, Polly wants a cracker, and Polly Wally Doodle all the day. Now, I don't know about any of you, but I am really sensitive. And I don't like to be teased, and I don't like to be laughed at. But what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's no negatives in God's world. It's just my perception that's negative. Everything has a positive result. And today I love having the name Polly, because I can walk into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous when there's all these people. And when somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. There's just not many Pollys in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic, but I knew that I was a drunk, and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something, because I knew that I was dying, and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift. Because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Almost 20 years ago, on October the 27th, it will be 20 years, I married Dave. And Dave's last name is Pistol. I am now Polly Pistol. God. God's got a sense of humor. I guarantee you, you will not walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. My husband Dave says, Polly, I've made you everything you are. If it weren't for that name, nobody would remember you. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. And I just knew that I'd found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. Well, I'd married a SAC pilot, and this man was going to be gone, and he was going to be gone for years at a time, and I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. Now, I don't know about any of you, but I've never wanted to be responsible for myself. I am one of these people that in Texas we call it puffing up, you know, where you just kind of puff up, and somebody says, what's wrong? Nothing. But the truth is, it becomes your responsibility to find out what's wrong, and then it becomes your responsibility to make me happy, and if you don't love me. And I love what Clancy says. Clancy says that we're people who have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't treat us special, then we feel rejected. And that's how I feel. I felt it was never my I was never my responsibility. You were my responsibility. And I was one of these people that has never had any kind of self-worth. I can remember sitting in that Baptist Sunday school, and I just knew that any minute God was going to strike me, and I was just going to burn in hell for life, just like Clara was talking about today. I always knew I was burning in hell. And I guarantee you one thing that I learned was, thou shalt not drink. Because drinking was something that was totally tabooed. And those were my perceptions, and those were the way I thought about things. And the other thing is I married this man at 18 years old. Here I am, a person who has absolutely never felt I measured up. And here I am, and I have no education. And I'm just certain that everybody knows that I'm stupid. I barely have a high school education. I was very busy doing a lot of socializing in high school. And so what I did is I just wasn't the brightest light on the tree. And I just always felt like people thought I was stupid. And I go into the military, and I'm sitting out just like you're sitting, and there's a lady, and she's standing behind a podium just like me. And she happens to be the base commander's wife, and she's talking to all us little second lieutenant's wife. And she's going to tell us how we're going to help our husband. And she's telling us what our responsibility will be in order to escalate his career. And we're going to have to do all of these things. And we're going to have the right dinner parties. And we're going to have to show up at these luncheons. And we're going to have to do all these things. And I'm supposed to be involved in all these activities. And I'm supposed to wear the right gloves and the right hat. And I'm absolutely terrified. I am so overwhelmed with intimidation of these women, and I am so full of inadequacy that I don't feel like there's any way I will ever be able to do this. And what happened is one day at a luncheon, I picked up a glass of sherry. And what happened for me, I don't recall it being any big deal, except that everybody was doing it, and I did it. I just picked up that glass of sherry. Now, my husband tells a totally different story about his drinking. He said he took a drink, and it went down to the ends of his toes and out to the ends of his fingers, and his red hair turned brown, and his freckles fell off. Now, those things did not happen for me. I don't really recall that much of anything happened. The only thing is I knew that what happened was, is if I took a drink of alcohol, all that anxiety that was going on just sort of eased off, and I just wasn't so terrified. And it seemed like I could sit at a cocktail party and nod in the right places and laugh in the right places and just not make a fool of myself. And that's what I did, and for a very long time it worked. Along about 1962, we're stationed at a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. And it's at the very, very tippy top of Maine. In fact, one of our TV stations was Stephenville, Newfoundland. And that's where we were. And it's like, you know, 50 below zero, and I've got these two little boys, and I don't have a clue how to be a parent. I absolutely have no tools in which to be a parent. And I've got these two little boys, and I can't send them out to play, and they're driving me crazy, and I'm having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. And I go to an Air Force doctor, and he says, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nimutol and drank alcohol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of pills and you drink alcohol, you are not an active alcoholic. Now, I am absolutely your wussiest drunk. I nearly died from the disease of alcoholism, but I have got the puniest story. I just did my dying on my living room sofa. I just laid there and watched soap operas and listened to Joan Baez sing the blues. I didn't have any affairs. I did all that sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe that the disease of alcoholism is a family disease. And I believe that one of the things that we just don't pay enough attention to in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is a chapter called The Family Afterwards. And I love when Carol talks, because Carol talks about working this program at home. And I have the privilege of sponsoring a lot of young women. And they've gotten married in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they have children. And it's real important that they stay home and be mothers to those children. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Family Afterwards says, if we are hanging out in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and we're not taking care of our families, what difference is it? What difference is it? And so my family is very important. And what happened is that I didn't know anything about that because I had a disease called alcoholism. But I believe that this is a family disease, and that is anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. And I have seen people die from the disease of alcoholism, and they never take a drink. That's the disease of alcoholism. And Carol talked today about what goes on in alcoholic families. And I'm here to tell you that I am so grateful for a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, because today, women like me do not get to keep their children. Women like me, their children are taken from them. Because you see, I am a child abuser. I am a woman who abused my children. I physically, spiritually, emotionally abused my children. And my children have been traumatized by a disease called alcoholism. Now, I'm grateful for strong sponsorship. I'm grateful for people who got in my face and told me the truth, whether I wanted to hear it or not. And when I got through doing my fourth and fifth step with my sponsor, and I ended up with my first sponsor had been a Monsignor priest. And I was raised Southern Baptist, and I don't know if you're used to, you know people who are in the South or you're in the South, but the Baptists and the Catholics hated each other. I mean, they just talked about each other all the time. And I believe God gives you exactly what you need, and he sent me Frank. And Frank had been a priest, and he had left the priesthood and married a Taiwanian woman. And Frank began to teach me about God. And he looked at me after I had done my fifth step, and we did six and seven, and we were on eight and nine, and he says, Polly, you're going to go make amends to those children. And you're going to go home, and you're going to look yourself in the mirror, and you're going to say to yourself, Polly, you are a child abuser. And then you're going to sit down, and you're going to make amends to those boys. And I didn't think I could do that. And I wanted to be really, you know, just really a smartass about the whole thing. So I went back to Frank and I said, well, you know, Frank, I think maybe I just need to accept the things I can't change. And Frank says, I don't think so. He says, that prayer has three parts. And he says, and you're going to pray for the courage to change the things you can. And you're going to sit down with those boys and you're going to tell them how sorry you are. And then you're going to sit there and you're going to listen to every single thing they have to say to you. And when they get done, you're not going to say you shouldn't feel that way. He said you're going to tell them how sorry you are that that happened to them. And that you're going to spend the rest of the days of your life being the very best mom you know how to be. And that's exactly what I did. And I'm here to tell you today, 23 years later, I have the best relationship with my sons that I could have ever, ever imagined. So when somebody gets in your face and tells you the truth, whether you want to hear it or not, and they're telling you to take actions you don't want to take, the only thing I'm saying is just take actions contrary to the way you feel. And absolute miracles will happen in your life. You won't believe it can happen. And I was listening to Patrick, and you are just adorable. I just thought you were so fabulous. The 10-minute speakers have been fabulous. And they have been, yes. Very good. This is about doing actions. And I don't know why cleaning ashtrays work. I have never understood that. I don't know why going to meetings when I don't want to go to meetings. I don't know why that works. I don't know why sitting and listening to speakers sometimes that I think are just awful. I don't know why that works. I don't know why when I stay at my home group till 30 or 40 minutes after the meeting's over because I want to make sure every single cigarette butt has been picked up so we don't lose our meeting place. I don't know why that works. I don't know. It seems like it shouldn't, but it does. It just seems like the more I do, the better I feel. I don't know why that works. But I want to just give you an example of that tonight. I really have not been feeling good this weekend. I've just been really puny. And I was really puny tonight. And I was sitting there and I was kind of, Lisa and Carol are sick of it. They have said, oh, we're going to have to listen to more whining. So I was whining again about feeling bad. I was sitting there, and then my night totally changed. I was sitting here, and I saw this lady walk across. She was a woman that I sponsored many years ago, and I didn't even know she was alive. And she knew I was speaking tonight, and she came, and she has a year's sobriety. And I mean, it's just like... There are two women sitting here that I used to work with, they're here tonight. And I saw them, and it was like my whole life. I mean, it was like, oh, my God, that's what happens for me. If I'll just show up, no matter what, something happens, and all of that just went away. I don't know how it works. I'm just telling you it does. It just does. Because just when I think I can't do what I need to do, then God sets those gifts right in front of me, and there it is. I am absolutely the most blessed woman on earth. And I thought it was money, men, and mansions. And I am absolutely the wealthiest woman on earth. I'd just like to tell you a few things that brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a car wreck in Irving, Texas, right where the Dallas Cowboys play football. I totaled an automobile, and I got out of my car, and I went and I called the police to tell the police that my car was stolen. And here come the police with my husband. I get to go to the Irving police station, and I get to see that look on the non-alcoholic's face that just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this policeman looked at my husband with so much disgust, and he says, why don't you just take her home and sober her up? And on the way home, my husband said, Polly, there's a treatment center, and it's not far from our house, and I wish you would go. And that night, I entered treatment for the first time. This was not a fancy jitter joint. This was a county detox. And I walked in, and I really loved the people. I loved the laughter. I loved the meetings. I loved all that. But you see, there was something down inside of me that said, Polly, people like you don't become alcoholic. And Dr. Tebalt says that there's two characteristics found in every alcoholic, grandiosity and defiant individuality. He has another little saying. He says, only an alcoholic can lay in the gutter feeling superior to those looking down. And here I was in this treatment center, but people like me don't become alcoholic. And while I was in there, I had one of those Jitterhouse romances, you know, where sick falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny. Well, we walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. And Frank, who would become my first AA sponsor, 12-stepped me out of a motel in Euless, Texas, and brought me back into that treatment center. And I had been beaten up and numerous and sundry other things. And I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, because I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. And boy, did I understand you, Patrick. The problem was sobriety. Because sober, I can't stand the kind of mother I am. And sober, I can't stand the kind of wife I am. And sober, I can't stand the kind of daughter I am. And I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that men hate what they've done and women hate what they have become. And I hated what I had become. And I knew that there was absolutely no way I could live sober inside my own skin. There was absolutely no way. Because you see, I really hadn't gotten the message. I didn't understand that the solution was the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I knew that there was no way I could live sober inside my own skin. And I left that treatment center and I got a bottle of scotch and I got a bottle of Valium and I checked into a motel. And I love what Clara was talking about because I believe in angels too. I used to call them Eskimos, but I do so much woman to woman that today it's angels. I believe that everybody has an angel in your life. And these angels lead us to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such an angel in my life. And she knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day that something came over her. And today I know what that something was. That was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And I hadn't shut the door all the way, and she pushed it open. On April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. Now, needless to say, that didn't take us. I'm standing here tonight. But I need to tell you about the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Father Leo says that everybody has a moment where we just have that moment. I don't remember having that moment. I believe that I am a product of divine intervention. I believe that every day I walk in grace. I am so grateful that I have been given the gift of life. Every day when I wake up and I breathe, I'm grateful. I am grateful that I have the gift of life. And I haven't always been that way, in the rooms or out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But today I know that I am an alcoholic who walks in grace. And I believe that every alcoholic in this room has been given the gift of grace. Every alcoholic who walks through the rooms of into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is given the gift of grace. Unfortunately, most people give it back. But we are given that gift, the gift of grace. And by God's grace in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I know today that I have given the gift of grace. I ended up in that hospital, and in 1977, the state of Texas did not take kindly to people who tried to take their life, and I was put on one of those little 5150 holes, and I was put into a psychiatric hospital for 3 days, and on April the 11th of 1977, my husband had a court order from a judge in Fort Worth, Texas, that said I was court committed to treatment. And this alcoholic who said people like me don't become alcoholic had just been court committed to treatment.
And I entered that treatment center on April the 11th of 1977. And by God's grace in this program, I haven't had a drink since. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and a vision for you. Thank you. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and a vision for you says that if we remain spiritually fit, that great events will come to pass. That's the great fact for us all. And I would like to spend the time that I have left telling you the great events that have come to pass in my life. When I started in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a sponsor that told me to get busy. Now, I don't know about any of you, but I wasn't really good at reading. I was really quick. And I couldn't concentrate, and I read just as much as I could, but I got busy in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got busy. And I was told if I had 30 minutes more sobriety than that person that just walked in the rooms to share that 30 minutes of sobriety. And I was told to get into service. And I got into service. And you know, it's the one thing that I haven't stopped doing. There are days in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous when I do not have a conscious contact with God. There are days in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous when I don't feel good about myself. I still have those days. But the thing that I have learned to do is to take actions contrary to the way I feel and pick up the phone and ask you, how do you feel? And when I get out of myself, it is amazing what happens to me. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I have a disease of self. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says the root of our problem is selfishness and self-centered. That's my problem. And the only way that I'm going to get better is to reach out for you. You see, psychologists and psychiatrists, they try to help us. They really try to help us. But what they do is they try to say, you need to do it for you. Let me tell you, the best I could do for me got me a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. The only time I started getting better is when I cared about you. And you know what? I don't need to like it. I just need to do it. I don't need to like to do it. And one time I listened to a speaker saying that his sponsor says, the reason it's called service is because it's not necessarily fun. And that's what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody said I had to like it. They just said I had to do it. And the more I do it, the better I feel. That's just, I know the tools today. I know what to do. I am a person who has suffered depression in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have suffered depression clear into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous till I was almost 9 years sober. I know what it feels like to still think that suicide is an option, even when drinking isn't. But today, when I have those feelings, I know what to do. I call somebody else. I call. I get up. I go take a walk. I do things I don't feel like doing. I do things I don't want to do. And the thing that I have learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is this too shall pass. This too shall pass. When I got sober in Texas, and we had a whole bunch of old rednecks in Texas, and they're not really loving. And these old men, they would sit back, and they'd always be against the wall, and they weren't standing up there like that, Patrick. They were leaning in their chairs with their arms, you know, like this, leaning back against the wall. And somebody would walk into the room, and they'd say, oh, my God, my house caught on fire. I lost my job. My husband left me, and I wrecked the car. And this old guy would stand back there and he'd say, well, it looks to me like you had a lot of ways to grow today and you blew them all. And early on in sobriety, I learned about opportunities to grow. You see, I always thought somebody was after me and God was punishing me. That's what I used to think, that God was punishing me. But you see, I don't think that anymore. I think that God loves me so much that he gives me opportunities to grow. You see, I believe that God is so powerful, he could look at me and he could just go woo, 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 and I'd just be perfect. I know God could do that. I just don't think he works like that. I think what he does is he gives me life experiences to use. And then like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that, you know, my life experience is my greatest asset. Whatever happened to me is my greatest asset. And what I get to do is I get to pass it on. I get to take what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get to pass it on. And that's the miracle. We have a miracle here that every organization wants that we have. And that's the language of the heart. That's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. And Dr. Bob says if you take this program and you boil it down, it'll come out to two words. And that's love and service. And you know what? I was told by my first AA sponsor, I don't care who you don't like. I don't care what you don't like about them. But you have to love them because they are God's kid, and you better pray for them to have everything you want for yourself. Because if you don't, whatever you put out is what you're going to get back. And I'm grateful for the things like that that I've learned because I love what Carol said today. She said a resentment is like peeing on yourself. Only you feel bad. And that's true. That's the truth. I loved it. When I was 3 years sober, I had been married for 22 years. And my husband and I had a very strained relationship for a very long time. And he and I decided to divorce. And I'm really grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful that I was 3 years sober. And I had to hit a bottom, I want you to know, in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in my early sobriety that was every bit as devastating as the bottom I had hit behind alcohol and drugs, and that was behind relationships and sex. I wanted somebody to love me. I was not willing to be responsible for my own happiness. I just knew it had to be your fault, and that if you know, it was all your fault. And what I've learned today is that, thank God, my problems are of my own making. Because, you see, if they were of your making, then I'm screwed. Because the only way I'm going to get better is if you change. And today I know that it's all about me. And it's all about what I'm willing to do for me. And my husband and I divorced. And my husband died 2 years ago. My ex-husband died. And I want you to know, because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, when he went, there was no bad feelings. And not too long ago, his wife came to visit my son. And she came to my house for dinner. And she held me in her arms and she says, Polly, you know how I feel because you loved him too. That's a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what we learn to do here, is we learn to heal when it doesn't seem possible to heal. When I was 3 years sober, I married another member of this fellowship. And I'd known Dave since I was 6 months sober. And Dave and I often say if we'd have known we were going to get married, we wouldn't have told each other the things we told each other. And Dave and I had never had anything but a really good AA relationship. There was no hanky-panky. He sponsored a lot of men that I'd had a hanky-panky with, but it wasn't him. And when I was 3 years sober, David moved to Salt Lake City, Utah, and I was still in Texas, and he came back to Texas. And he looked at me and he says, Polly, I'm in love with you, but you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you. And you see, things like that aren't supposed to happen to people like me. And I'm here to tell you 20 years later, on October the 27th, I am more in love with my husband than I was 20 years ago. And Dave and I, thank you. And today, I behave like a married, sober woman. I can tell the women I sponsor when I leave town that I am going to behave like a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My group knows that when I am out of town, I am going to behave like a sober woman in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you see, I believe this is a program of attraction. And when some young woman walks through that door with her husband, I don't want to be standing at this podium in some sleazy dress and some sleazy outfit and her be afraid to come in. But you see, that's what it used to be like. I was not an attraction to this program. But today, I believe that this is a program of attraction. And I always want to be an attraction in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe that I owe that to my husband, to the women I sponsor, and to my home group, to behave and to be an attraction. Because you see, what I've learned is I may be the only big book anybody ever reads. And I have one of those little circles and a triangle on my car, and I get to have a spiritual awakening every morning and every afternoon because I get on an L.A. freeway, and I drive 1.5 hours to work and home every day. Now, it's real easy when people don't do it my way to flip them off. But you see, I've got that little circle and a triangle on my car. And I don't want somebody to see and say, see, that doesn't work. I want always to be an attraction to this program. So I just smile and take actions contrary to the way I feel. I want you to know that you can be married happily ever after and not have anything in common. My husband and I have absolutely nothing in common except the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we both are passionate about this program. We both love this program. But that's all we have. I am married to this guy who is a member of Mensa. And I still have no more education than that high school education. I am married to a man who's just even. And I am one of these people that runs just about like this. And I'm married to this man who likes to throw a 40-pound pack on his back and climb around on mountaintops and throw ropes up and climb up. And I'm one of these people that do not like to do anything of those things in the woods. And I don't like to climb mountains because they skin your knee. But what we have is that we have the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am Dave's fourth wife. And as Miss Thornton likes to remind Dave, he is the only common denominator in all four of those marriages. So Dave knows how to marry a lot. Now, I'm on the other side. I know how to hang in there for 22 years. So you see, Dave and I had absolutely no tools in which to have a marriage. We both knew how to take a hostage, but we didn't know how to have a marriage. But we came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my first AA sponsor said, Polly, if you want to be happy all the days of your life, treat each other like a newcomer. And you treat each other like a newcomer. How do we treat newcomers? With love, patience, and tolerance. And he says, you don't get to leave. The only thing that you get to leave is if there's any kind of abuse. And there's no way that there would ever be abuse in our marriage. But that's it. We have to stay no matter what. And then Dave and I met some people that taught us how to work the traditions in our relationship. What a phenomena. In California, we read that the traditions are to the group as the steps are to the individual. And Dave and I are a group. And by God's grace in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, Dave and I will be married 20 years on the 27th of October. And that is absolutely a great event that's come to pass. I want to quickly tell you about my two sons. When I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I realized that my 14-year-old son was a full-blown drug addict. And I walked around in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was just like, how can this be happening? And it was people like you in rooms like this that said, Polly, you just suit up and show up, because you may be the only big book that James ever reads. And when I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone, and he says, Mom, I want what you have. And 6.5 years before, my son did not want what I had. 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he says, don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. My son is 16.5 years sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's a great event that's come to pass. My youngest son is a candidate for Al-Anon. And my youngest son, I understood him the most because Russ was the kind that had just, I knew his desperation because he had a lot of depression. And Russ was one of these people that would take and cut on himself because if he cut on himself, he could take the physical pain better than he could take the emotional pain. And Russ was somebody who tried to keep taking his life. He just couldn't stand living inside his own skin. And I understood that because that was the way I was. I understood how he felt. And I said and I watched my son over and over and over try to take his own life. And I was sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just absolutely didn't think I could stand it. And I'd go into meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd just be torn down. And I'd be talking about my son, and somebody in the back of the room would start hollering, "Turn him over, turn him over." Now, I don't know if anybody's come up to you and said that to you if you've been in that kind of pain. But then one day I finally got up in the middle of the room and I was so devastated and I was in so much pain and I threw my arms up and I said, "Would you kindly tell me how to do that?" And you know what? They didn't know, so I went back to the rooms of Al-Anon. They know how to do that. Of course I feel that way. Of course you feel that way. That's your child. That's your child. And I didn't understand that it was okay that feelings and actions were two different things. The way I feel and the way I act are two different things. So what I began to do was concentrate on the actions and know that I can't change the feelings. But if I keep taking the right actions, those actions will change my thinking, and my thinking will change my feelings. And it was through those things that I learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was doing something just like I'm doing today, except it was about 10 years ago, and I was speaking on a Saturday morning, and my daughter-in-law called me on the phone, and she said my son was in the hospital one more time. He put a pair of scissors in his stomach. And I got up to talk that morning, and I was so torn down I couldn't hardly talk. And I just felt like I couldn't get through it. But, you know, I listened. It was to Clara and Silas said, "When you have ears that can hear and you have eyes that can see, then you can hear when you can hear and you can see when you can see." And I was standing there at that podium, and after I finished, this man walked up to me. And he says, "Young lady, you and I need to talk. And we need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you need to read the chapter to the agnostic. And you need to know that God either is or he isn't. He is either all things or he's nothing. And what God does with his kids is none of your business." And I was able to release my son, Russ. And I'm here to tell you that my son hasn't hurt himself in 10 years. I'd like to tell you that he is a grateful member of Al-Anon, but he's not. And I'm here to tell you that I had the group picked out. I had his sponsor picked out. But Russ had married a Catholic girl. And Russ has become a Catholic, and he found his way in the Catholic Church. And I tell you, every Thursday night when Russ and Cheryl bring Jesse and Katie to my house, I am so grateful that Russ didn't do what he tried to do. Because, you see, Jesse and Katie are my little granddaughters. And when Katie opens that door, she comes running up to me, and she just hugs me, and she says, "Oh, Grandma, I love you so much. You're my very best friend." And I'm here to tell you that's a great event that's come to pass. On May the 23rd, 1993, a great event came to pass. And his name was Ryan David Klinger Lee. And he's my grandson. And my son Russ married a beautiful woman named Kelly. And Kelly is over 11 years sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they had this little boy, Ryan. And I tell you, we thought the heavens had opened up and this child had come, and we just knew that an angel had been born. And Ryan's got blonde, curly hair, and people always say, "Polly, he looks just like you." And, of course, I just absolutely love that. And if any of you were at the big, at Bill W.'s big family reunion in San Diego, Ryan was the main attraction. Just absolutely adorable. But when Ryan was 18 months old, we got some devastating news. And that news was is that we found out that Ryan was profoundly deaf. And I had my fist at God. And we were sitting there, how can this be happening to us? We're doing the deal. We're all sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're doing the deal. How can this be happening to us? But you see, one more time, our perception of reality was distorted. We didn't know that God was going to give us a gift. We just thought that this was some tragedy. And we didn't understand it. And what happened was, is that here was this little boy, and we all loved him so much. And the only way that we were going to be able to communicate with this little boy is if our family learned to sign. And our family, we all went to school, and we learned to sign. And I'm here to tell you, I had no idea what God was about to do. But I have had the opportunity to carry the message to four deaf women in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'm really slow, but they don't care. It's just the very fact that I'm willing to sign. Kelly and James were coming to visit us, and it was for Christmas because they always came out at Christmas time. And Kelly was pregnant. And the doctor felt that it was very necessary that she go have a test because they wanted to see if anything was wrong with the child she carried because she had already had a child with a birth defect. And she went to have this test, and what she found out is that she was in the late stages of aborting the child she carried and didn't even know it. And they did a cerclage on her and put her to bed for 5 months. Now, you see, today we have Chris. But see, you can't tell our family that it hadn't have been for Ryan's deafness, we wouldn't have Chris. And you see, God's been performing miracles like this in our lives. But the deal is I never, ever could see him until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. God has always been performing miracles in my life. But I never could recognize him, and I never could see him because I simply could not see. And then a year and a half ago, we had Maddie. So by God's grace, I have 5 grandchildren. And I don't know if you're a grandma, but there ain't nothing like it. And I'll tell you one thing. I was not a good mom, and I abused my children. But I'm here to tell you right now, I am one dynamite grandma. You see, I was like Carol. I had them bathed and starched and fed. But that's what I did with my kids. But I neglected them. I didn't give them any attention. I didn't do anything. But you know, I can sit down and I can watch Tarzan for the 999th time. And I am never too busy to do it. And that's what you gave to me. And that's a great event that's come to pass. Two and a half, 3 years ago, James and Kelly came to Dave and I, and they said, Mom and Dave, Kelly and I made a will, and we want you to know that if anything happens to us, that we want you and Dave to take the boys. They didn't have Maddie yet. That's a great event that's come to pass. And about 8 months ago, Russ and Cheryl came to Dave and I, and they said, Mom, if anything happens to Cheryl and I, we want you to take the girls. Here is a mother who abused her children. Here is a mother who traumatized her children. But because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, my children want me to be responsible for their most precious cargo if anything happens to them. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. That is a great event that has come to pass. In June of this year, Ryan had a cochlear implant. He was a marginal candidate because his deafness is brainstem. And I want you to know in July, I went out to babysit my grandchildren for a week. And that was absolutely in what an order. I can't go through with it. But I did. I want you to know I was knee-walking exhausted when I came home. But one of the things that I got to hear that whole week was Grandma Polly. And I had never heard that because Ryan had never been able to say that. What great events have come to pass. Our son, my stepson Mike, is HIV positive. And Clara talked about that today. But you see, he's one of the lucky ones because he got to have it when their medicine was around. And he's totally asymptomatic. And that's a great event that's come to pass. I tell you, because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, you have given me the keys to the kingdom. I absolutely love my life. And I hope you take this program and you treat it like your very life depends on it, because it does. And I hope you remember that this program, we want it here for our children. I don't want anybody changing anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want you making it gender specific or all those things. I love the way it is. I want this program to be just like it was for me 23 years ago. I want it to be just like it was for James 16 years ago. Because you see, I think my grandson Ryan's going to need you. And I'm going to tell you a quick story and sit down. When we needed to find out the degree of Ryan's deafness, we need to run some tests on him. And we needed to put him to sleep to do that. Well, they gave him the medication and nothing happened. And they gave him the medication again and nothing happened. They gave him the medication the third time and he went to sleep. And he woke up and he was doing this. And that's more. And so guard this program as if your very life depends on it. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct. The very best I could do for me is to get me pronounced dead on arrival. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct. But because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, you breathe life into me. And tonight I'm the woman I've always wanted to be. I am a woman who's loved one man with all my heart for 20 years. And I have been faithful and true to that one man. And I never thought I could do that. And that's a great event that's come to pass. I am a woman who has been self-supporting through her own contribution. Because of that Big Errol Space layoff a few years ago, my husband ended up losing his job, and he didn't get to work for 2 years except some just, you know, minimum wage jobs. And here's this woman who needed money, men, and mansions, and I was the sole support of our family. And I can do that, and I didn't know I could do that. And I am a woman who's been self-supporting through my own contribution. And that's a great event that's come to pass. And I am a woman who knows about commitment. You know, I know you just stay no matter what. And when somebody asks you to do something, you just do it, no matter what. Because you see, it's really the easier, softer way. But the place I'd always felt like such a failure was that as a mom. And a few years ago, my sons came to me and they said, Mom, you're the mom we always wanted you to be. My son James, I talked to my son James on Friday. And I talk to James a lot, and one of the reasons probably is because I have an 800 number. But James says, what are you up to this weekend? And I said, well, Lisa and Carol and I are going to go up to Lake Tahoe. And James says, well, Mom, you be sure and you tell all those people in Lake Tahoe that your son James loves you. And that's a great event that's come to pass. God bless. I love you too.